Pastor.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We're going to wait another minute and then we'll start.
Okay.
Oh, and Paula mentioned she'll have to not work like she does if she has another baby.
Yeah, that might happen.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening.
Another baby?
No. Once she passes the bar, I don't see her not
working.
Not working.
Yeah, if she has that jump. And then Josh is getting everything together.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoach. Anabakoach, Gedulat Shemincha, Tatir Tserura, Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tat Sadi, Kabel Rinat Amcha Sad Beinu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dor Sheyechutcha Kivavat Shamren Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. The letters of the month of Cheshvan, the Dalet that created the planet Ma'adim, the planet Mars, and the Nun that created the constellation, the Akrav, the Scorpio. Together, the Dalet and the Nun spell the Hebrew word Din, which translates as judgment. And Cheshvan is considered a month that's very connected to judgment, because that's when the flood was started.
That's a difficult month?
Usually it's a difficult month for some people, most people. But you can transform that in your consciousness by utilizing binding, by striking. Barchem tacharem rachamei sidkatcha tamid gamlem betet resh tzadi taf gimel chasin kadosh birov tuvcha na'el adatecha het kuf bet Tet Nunayan. Yachid Gee Lamcha Pene Zokre Kedushatecha Yod Gimelamed Pe Zayan Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziyakatenu Yodea Ta'alumo Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Tav. We've brought the energy of creation into our space, and now we will separate the negative aspect of that creation utilizing the 13 attributes of wisdom. Adonai Yohei Wahei Adonai Yohei Wahei El Rahum V'chanun Erech Apayim V'rav Chesed V'emet Notzer Chesed La'alafim Noseh Avon V'afesha V'chata'avinake. Now we're going to mention the verses because I basically haven't memorized them and don't have access to them right now. But the two verses that connect to this year of 5777, the year of the goat,
Malcolm,
is Lamentations chapter 3, verse 52 or 4. And that the first letters of that verse please mute your phone because I'm getting feedback. And the so the first letters of the five words that make up that verse permute into the three words Tzatzkiach, which means, translates as appear like brothers. And the second verse that connects to the year 5777 through its through the fact that it has the name of the year concealed within the verse, Tafshin Ayin Zion, on an equal letters sequence of seven letters each. And that is Joshua chapter 23, verse 8. And the eighth verse of the Anabakoach, we say in a whisper. Now I'm going to read a verse from the Zohar, from the Parashah of Noach. I'm reading from section 26. And Noach went into the ark. I'm reading verse 196. L'shem Yehud Kudsha Berichu Ishkin Tei Bid Hilu Urchimu Ud Hilu Ud Hilu Urchimu L'yakta Shem Yud Hei Bavav Hei B'Yehuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah V'yehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Ma'asei Adenu Kunanei Aleinu Ma'asei Adenu Kunaneihu Tachatze kad barnash chate kamein mareya v'yamshich garmeya le'it kasya kudsha barichu aved beyadina v'it galya v'kad barnash adke garmeya Kudsha Berichu Ba'e Liastara Le'ya Dila Yitfaze B'yom Af Hashem Divadai Iba'e Le'ya Le'in Ish Dila Yitfaze Kamei Mecha Bela Kad Sharia Ko'al Alma Dila Yistakel Be'ya Deha Kol Inun Di'it Chazun Kameya It Le'ya Rishu Lecha Bala. Come and see, when a person sins before his master and sins further by hiding himself and making himself believe that nobody is watching him. I hope you're well, Alan.
Yeah, you too.
Then the Holy One, blessed be He, punishes him openly. But when that person purifies himself and repents, then the Holy One, blessed be He, seeks to hide him so that he should not be seen on the day of the wrath of Hashem. For certainly every person should hide himself so as not to be seen by the angel of destruction when the latter dwells in the world. He should not see him as he is authorized to destroy all those whom he sees. Does anyone have any questions? Today?
Shem is to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and there's two. Isn't there another
one coming up?
No.
Not now.
Oh.
No, actually, it's in this parasha. There's the Tower of Babel and the Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah is coming up, and this parasha is the tower.
Okay. But then the final one is a kind of Sodom and Gomorrah, where all the enemies of Israel pile up and
God
gets them all. Megiddo?
The Armageddon War. But we don't have to have that happen.
You're talking about future event.
Yeah.
That's a future event, and hopefully we're doing our work so it won't have to happen that way. Because there's two paths. One that is filled with that kind of chaos, and one that is the lamb lying down with the lion.
That's a lot better.
And that's what, by studying Kabbalah, that's what we try and achieve. By changing ourselves, that's what we try and achieve. Let me rephrase that. That's what we will achieve.
Yes.
So today's class is our class in advanced reincarnation classes. And it's available on the Yeshem website in the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, row 11, the second column from the left. And this is the Hashem site, the site that I put together. It's also row, it's the fourth class. Class number four is what we're doing tonight. Now, 2 weeks ago, or really 3 weeks ago, we had done that already. But we didn't complete it, so we're just starting over because we're starting with Chapter 1, Section 9. Last week we did Section 6, 7, and 8. And this section is about the world of Asiya being only one Sephirah. There is a second reason for the difference between Asiya and the other worlds. As is known, all the worlds have 10 Sephirot collectively. Now, Asiya, in its entirety, has only one Sephirah of the collective 10, and that is the Sephirah of Malchut. The world of Asiya is our physical world. So, as our physical world, it is Malchut of the universe. And since the Malchut, what it's saying is there's only one Sephirah here, although there can be 10 Sephirot within that. But we'll come to understand that as we go on. In the system of 10 general Sephirot, the world of Asiya corresponds to the Sephirah of Malchut, whereas the world of Yetzirah corresponds to 6 different and separate Sephirot, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. Thus, the world of Asiya is one homogeneous Sephirah, whereas Yetzirah is a composite of 6 different Sephirot. Thus, the nefesh that is there is able to rise as high as the Keter of Asiya, because it is all one Sephirah. In other words, even though Asiya has many levels, they are levels of one Sephirah, and therefore connected to each other, which allows movement amongst them. However, Yetzirah corresponds to 6 Sephirot, Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod, each of which is a separate level. Therefore, if someone's root is the Malchut of Yetzirah, and it becomes rectified, it cannot ascend and become part of the Yesod of Yetzirah. It must remain below, and he will have to acquire a new Ruach from the Yesod of Yetzirah if he wants to become elevated through his actions. This is true of the rest of the six extremities as well, meaning the six extremities are the six Sephirot. In Hebrew, the term is Shesh Kitzvot, the six extremities, or the six ends. And then another name for the six Sephirot of Yetzirah. My commentary. Kitzvot is more usually translated as ends. Zeron Pin represents six ends, since the top five, Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, and Hod, truly have a desire for what Bina has to share, which is a significantly less intense than the Or Chachmah. This light of wisdom, ultimately the only purpose of the six Sephirot of Zeron Pin, is to come to its end. And when Malchut elevates to Bina, these six will disappear. Remember, there is no disappearance in spirituality, as we will discuss as we go through these lessons. The five Partsufim in every world, Arichan Pin, Abba, Ima, Zeron Pin, and Nukva, correspond to the five levels of a person's soul, which are from the bottom to the top, the Nefesh, the Ruach, the Neshama, the Chaya, and the Yechidah. Nefesh is from the Nukva of Zeron Pin, whereas Ruach is from Zeron Pin itself. That is the six Sephirot, Hesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. Neshama is from Ima, from Bina, and Chaya is from Abba, which is called Chachma, because that is the place of life, as it has been taught concerning the verse. Wisdom gives life to its owner. Yechida is from Arichan Pin, called Keter, because it is alone and special. The Hebrew word Yechida means both alone and special. The Partsuf of Arichan Pin is both alone and special relative to all the other Partsufim. It is alone and special with respect to the rest of the Sephirot, because it lacks a female counterpart. If you visualize the tree of life, the Keter is in the central column, whereas when you speak of Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, each of those have male and female relationships, Chesed to Gevura, Netzach to Hod, and Tiferet to Yesod. The Nukva, the Partsuf of Malchut, is the female consort of Zeron Pin. The Abba, the father, has a female counterpart in Ima, the mother. Arichan Pin, however, does not have a counterpart. This is known from the verse, "See now that I am he," as elucidated in the Zohar and Parashat of Bereshit. This verse is spoken by God, who has no counterpart. Arihan Pin is also called I. Thus, on the level of Arihan Pin, the highest level and closest to the one God, the infinite creator, there is no counterpart and no corresponding female part sooth. My commentary. What is being revealed here is the relationship of the soul sparks being vessels similar to the vessels of the Sephirot. When one understands the relationship of Zeron Pin and the five or the six Sephirot that compose it, one can begin to understand that the soul sparks are the fulfillment of the Sephirot, of a person, not the quantum level of Sephirot, not all of humanity. Although they can become light in the wrong vessel when one gets the thoughts that belong to another and starts to act on those thoughts. That's the end of section 9. Does anybody have any questions?
Now, we would call that, when you get the thoughts of another, mental malpractice.
Say again?
Mental malpractice. Somebody's forcing their thoughts over another.
No.
Not suggesting being sick or suggesting you in trouble or whatever.
No, no. The Sephirot are not forcing one over the other. They are in a hierarchy so that the intensity of the light is greater as you rise through the Sephirot from the bottom to the top. But the Sephirot are vessels, and we will discuss that in more detail in that the second class on Sunday. Of what is a vessel and what is light and what do they represent? Because in the endless world, the light and the vessel were unified. Whereas as after the sin, the light and the vessel are not necessarily unified and they go through a process of cleansing, a process of growth. But we'll discuss that in more detail on Sunday. The next section is Chapter 1, Section 10, and it's entitled Gilgulim and the Righteous. Gilgulim is the Hebrew word for reincarnation. Gilgulim means wheels, because reincarnation is the wheels of our soul. Essentially, there's a process that's like a wheel. Our DNA has a double helix, a double wheel. It's essentially the same idea. You come into this life, you make mistakes, and you go back around to start over again. That's the wheel of reincarnation. Know that if a person merits obtaining his nefesh, his ruach, and his neshama, and then blemishes them through sin, he will have to be reincarnated to rectify the damage. The process of Gilgul and Tikkun, reincarnation and correction, will be explained throughout the rest of the book, starting with the next chapter. The main point here is in this next paragraph. When he returns in a Gilgul with his nefesh and he rectifies it, his ruach will not join him. This is because his ruach remains blemished and it cannot rest upon a rectified nefesh. This is what's being taught in this chapter. In other words, rectified levels of souls do not reside in the same body with blemished ones. In what was discussed previously, the person was adding non-blemished, new divisions of soul to already rectified divisions of his own soul. However, once he has sinned and must come back another time, the process of tikkun changes. He cannot add blemished aspects of soul on top of parts that have already been rectified. Therefore, his blemished ruach will be reincarnated into another person, joining up with the nefesh of a convert. The neshama will likewise do the same. The Hebrew word for convert is ger, a word that also means stranger. Probably both meanings are applicable here. The nefesh that will host this blemished ruach must be the nefesh of a convert, but relative to the homeless ruach, it is also the nefesh of a stranger. My commentary. Actually, the above commentary is too restricted. The corrected nefesh is referred to as ger. This is because the ruach and the nefesh are strangers to each other. In the Torah, the terms of and the phrase, "Do not harm the widow, the orphan, and the stranger among you." I'm paraphrasing this. This verse and this series of statements or words is said many times in the Torah. And the teaching of that is, it is written a number of times, but this discussion we're going through now is adding a whole new perspective to the meaning of these verses and these words and phrases. The reason for this is explained elsewhere in chapter 4, section 2, based on the gates of the Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, from Parashat Mishpatim. And the nefesh that was rectified will receive a rectified ruach of a righteous person, who was similar to him in some of the particular good deeds that he performed. It will actually take the place of his own ruach. Similarly, if he rectifies his blemished ruach completely, then he will receive a neshama from some righteous person, which will act in place of his own neshama. This is the esoteric meaning of what the sages said. Righteous people are greater in death than during their lifetimes. Since their ruach can fulfill this important function in the lives of others. Now, after this person dies, his own rectified nefesh will go together with this ruach of a righteous person, and through it,
so they seriously move up.
One second, let me finish this paragraph. And through it, the ruach receives the blessing fitting for itself. When his own ruach, which joined with the nefesh of a convert, becomes completely rectified, then his original nefesh will say, "I will go and return to my first husband, since it has been rectified." In other words, after parts of his own soul are rectified, they can later be reunited in another Gilgul, another reincarnation, and return together. It works in the same way for the neshama with respect to the ruach. After a person dies, they return in a reincarnation and achieve tikkun together, correction together. This is the end of the original introduction in chapter 1. That's the end of section 10. Does anybody have any questions? Now's the time.
What's tikkun?
Tikkun means correction, fixing of mistakes that someone makes. Now, you started to ask me a question. Do you remember what it is? I'm sorry if I caused you to forget it.
Yeah, that's okay.
You said something about them being related to each other. Or
when they reincarnate, it's just one person, not two, right?
You were talking up?
No, it's not necessarily one person. It's actually more complicated than that. But let's, for this discussion and where we are in our teaching, there's a soul that is called a nefesh level. Mm-hmm. It's put into a baby at birth. That baby goes through correcting any mistakes that nefesh level soul had made in a previous incarnation. Let's say it does achieve that. It makes the corrections. Then that, in the first incarnation, that nefesh receives a ruach from the same soul. The ruach is a more intense light. It's a higher level of consciousness. Now it goes through its correction process for the ruach. If it achieves that, it will receive a neshama, a higher level also. What this section is saying is, let's say the first incarnation, the nefesh is not completely rectified. That nefesh cannot come back together in that second reincarnation with the ruach or the neshama. So when that nefesh reincarnates, it may have 80% of its corrections done, but the other 20% it will have to do. Once it has completed its correction, then it will receive a ruach, but not from the soul that it is part of. It will receive a ruach from another person. In that body is two different souls, one at a lower level and one at a higher level. And that is considered, that nefesh is considered a ger, a stranger, to the ruach, because they're two different people. But the ruach needs the ger to be a garment to it, to be a coat, a covering, in order to do its work properly. And that's what this section is teaching us. Is it clear?
There are two souls in one body. There can be.
More than that, but that's okay. for right now, that's just what we're talking about.
Okay.
There's two souls and possibly three souls
working
together in the one body.
Right. How does that affect the physical? How does that affect the person?
The person doesn't know. Because the person, who is the person? Is the person the body? Or is the person the soul?
Person's
soul. So if somebody has a ruah and a stranger that is the nefesh, the lower level, who is the person, the ruah or the nefesh?
The the ruach.
Correct. It is the person is the ruach, and he is wearing the nefesh, but the nefesh is corrected, so there's nothing the nefesh is doing.
Okay.
It's all of the actions are being done by the ruach in concert with the body. So I'm hoping you're understanding this.
All but, actions are done by the higher level consciousness.
Yeah.
All actions are done by the higher level of consciousness, except if it's a positive action, if it's correcting the soul of the higher level, nothing happens to the
lower level.
To the lower level. But if the action is one of a negative act, a sin, then the lower level will be lowered along with the ruach.
Okay.
That's what happened when Adam sinned. All the lower levels were lowered at the same time. So the sin can be continue to lower and go deeper and to become more animalistic, etc. Or the higher level will correct itself. Now, if a ruach does a negative action and lowers the nefesh, then that nefesh will have to reincarnate to correct itself again.
Complicated.
It's not that, yes, it's complicated, but it isn't that complicated that we can't understand it.
Right.
Are there any other questions? So now we're going to go to the nefesh of the ger, the nefesh of the stranger, which is chapter 1, section 11. The concept of nefesh of the ger, the convert or the stranger, will be mentioned several times throughout this book, The Gates of Reincarnation. It will be worthwhile to examine it now in greater detail. We have already learned from the Ari several important rules. Firstly, a ruach cannot come into the world until the nefesh is completely rectified. And the neshama cannot come into the world until the ruach is completely rectified. Secondly, when the ruach comes into the world, it must come ensconced within a nefesh. However, if the ruach or the neshama were already in the world together with the nefesh, and they were blemished by sin, then the ruach must be rectified after completion of the nefesh. But then a blemished ruach cannot enter the world ensconced within the rectified nefesh. The rectified nefesh cannot become a vehicle or external garment to a blemished ruach. Yet the ruach and neshama cannot enter into the world without the intermediary of a nefesh. How can the ruach and neshama ever enter into the world to achieve rectification? Do you understand the paradox? On the one hand, the ruach has to wear a nefesh. It has to sit on a nefesh as a carrying entity. But it can't come back with its own nefesh unless it fixed it the first lifetime. So there's a paradox, there's a quandary. How does the ruach come into the world? If it's the second reincarnation, it has to come on a rectified nefesh from another person. The answer to this conundrum is the concept of the nefesh of the ger. The ruach or neshama grabs hold of the nefesh of a ger, ensconces itself within that nefesh, and in this way it enters into the world with the nefesh of a ger, serving as its intermediary or its interface. In addition, there are several points that need to be known to understand this concept of the nefesh of the ger. Firstly, when the nefesh joins with a ruach or a neshama, it has already been in the world. The convert has already done what was necessary to merit the correction. Secondly, the Ari will explain in later chapters that there are three basic types of soul: new souls, somewhat new souls, which are descended from Cain and Hevel, and old souls. The nefesh of the ger is a fourth type. The following are the relevant words of the Ari at the end of chapter 7 of Sefer of the Gates of Reincarnation. There are other nefeshot, the plural form of nefesh, of converts that fall out from the klipa of Noga, which is composed of good and evil, as mentioned in Parashat Vayechel. They are from the marital intercourse of the souls of the tzaddikim, the righteous ones, that take place every night in the earthly garden of paradise, as mentioned in Beshalach. The divisions of the souls of Israelites, however, are three. They are new souls, intermediate ones, which are the souls of Cain and Abel, and the old ones, which fell from Adam HaRishon when they sinned, and they fell into the klipot. Thirdly, we will learn that it is possible for a blemished ruach, whose nefesh has been completed, to enter into the body of a person, a stranger, but not necessarily a convert, who himself possesses an unfinished nefesh. And this is called double Gilgul. Those that want to examine this concept more extensively can read the translation and explanation of the relevant sections of the Zohar in note number 10. Note number 10 is explaining the verse in Mishpatim that if he takes a different wife. Let us consider the words of the Saba as they appear in the Zohar of Mishpatim. The post-biblical source of the concept, the nefesh of the ger. The relevant section of the Zohar is actually an exposition on the verse, if he takes a different wife. It concerns a Jewish girl who is sold by her father when she is still a minor. She is called an Ama Ivriya, a Jewish maidservant. The Torah requires that the person who bought the maidservant to marry her, or to marry her to one of his sons. If he does not do this by the time she becomes an adult, which is 12 years plus, then he gives her gifts and she goes out free. If he or one of his sons do marry her, then she is entitled to receive the love and respect due every Jewish wife, which is defined by the three categories: her food, her jewelry or her raiment, her clothing, and her qualitative time of intimacy. Even if he takes a different wife, he can never deny this girl her privileges, fully and without prejudice. However, the Zohar is considering this situation from an esoteric point of view. That's the commentary of the translator. My commentary. Rabbi Techer is unwilling to perceive this from the existence of a more mundane perspective. Actually, the Jewish maidservant is treated as a loved wife. This is coming from the Zohar. Section 88, or verse 88, all these souls of converts flew out from the Garden of Paradise in a hidden way. In other words, these souls were not born to holy seed. Normally, souls come from the higher Garden of Paradise into this world by passing through the lower garden, and then through the holy seed into the world. But these did not come down in a normal way.
You said they flew out in a hidden way. What kind of hidden way?
Suddenly they appeared far away, and somehow they made their way back. Their path is called concealed or hidden. When they leave this world, these souls that they gained, the converts from the Garden of Paradise, to what place do they return? Notice that these souls were already in the world. The converts, through their deeds, have earned them. The question here is, how do they get back to their place in the higher Garden of Eden? And where are they in the meantime? If they had come out in a normal and known way, then they could traverse their path in reverse to get back to the paradise. However, these souls had came out in a hidden way. How do they get back? Their way is hidden. And if they cannot get back, then where are they? Verse 89. We were taught in the first person to grab and take hold of the property of a convert, merits to it. There are two rules in Jewish law, in halakha, that are relevant to this statement and this discussion. Any Jew has an inheritor. There is some relative, however distant, who has the right to inherit his property. When he dies, his property is never up for grabs, since there is someone who has the legal right to inherit it. Number two, in contrast, a convert does not have a Jewish family tree that goes back for generations. He might die and leave no inheritors. In such a case, the rule is that this property is up for grabs. Whoever grabs the property of a convert who has died and left no inheritors merits the property. It is the same here with these holy and high neshamot who are designated by the Blessed Holy One to go down below, as we explained. According to the Ari, these are the ruchot, the ruachs, and the neshamot that were blemished in a previous lifetime. They go out at specific times to play in the lower Garden of Eden, and they meet the souls of converts. One then takes hold of one of these souls, unites with it, merits to it, ensconces itself within it, and goes out. Since their nefesh is completed, it is now time for them to be reincarnated. However, they cannot ensconce within their rectified nephesh because they are blemished. What do? They meet the souls. They meet the souls of converts. They grab hold of them. They ensconce within them. As within these garments, they are born into the world. They exist within these enveloping garments, and they remain in the garden in these garments, because all those that are existing within the lower garden of paradise cannot exist there if they were not clothed. Verse 90. If you will say, because of these garments, these souls will be denied the ecstasy that was theirs from the first. Perhaps this is talking about the original nefesh of the Ruach Neshama. This nefesh will have been cheated because it must now exist without a Ruach or a Neshama, which has gone off to join the nefesh of a ger. Or perhaps it is talking about the Ruach itself that is ensconced within the nefesh of the ger. The latter acts as an imposition, blocking out some of the ecstasy that was supposed to be absorbed by the Ruach and the Neshama. The Saba answers, behold, it is written, if it takes another wife to himself, then he shall not deny her food, her raiment, and her qualitative time of intimacy. In the garden, he exists ensconced within this garment that he grabbed and merited. But when he goes up from there, he removes it because he does not need to exist there within a garment. Thus, when the Ruach, the Neshama, goes up into the higher garden of Eden, he divests the garment. The interposition is removed, and he is free to rejoin the original nefesh. Moreover, in the nefesh of the ger has contained, the nefesh of the ger has gained an important benefit. It has been brought back into the higher paradise, albeit as a garment. But now that the Ruach has divested itself of its garment in the higher paradise, the nefesh of the ger is there on its own and as an independent entity. The nefesh is the interface. Verse 91. The Saba began to cry as he had done before, and he said to himself, old man, old man, you certainly have reason to cry and pour out tears over every word that you are revealing. But it is known to the Blessed Holy One and to the Holy Divine Presence that my heart is agreeable and I am speaking only in their service. They are the masters of all words, and they are crowned by them, by the words of Torah. Verse 92. All these holy souls come down into this world to inspire human beings and to take their place as is fitting. For each one of them, when they come down, each one is clothed in these souls that we discussed, the souls of converts. And that is how they enter into the holy seed.
What's the holy seed?
The Jewish, the children of Israel.
Excuse me.
In other words, a ruach or a neshama is ensconced within the nefesh of a ger, and in that way it reincarnates into the holy seed, into the body of a Jewish person. It is within these garments that they are able to exist and to be affected by the things of this world. When these envelopes, the souls of the converts, draw desired things from this world, then the holy neshamot are nourished from the odors that they smell in these garments. The nefesh of the convert is a garment that envelopes the higher souls from the levels of neshama and ruah. And it is through this exterior garment that envelopes them that the neshamot and ruchot enter into the physical world. In other words, the nefesh of the convert is the interface between the higher souls and the physical world. The neshama and the ruach can enter the world only when they are enveloped in a nefesh, which acts as their interface. They can only benefit from the world by the sense of smell. This they do through the interface of the nefesh.
They're enveloped by what?
By the nefesh. They do this through the interface of the nefesh, and if they cannot use their own nefesh, then they get to use the so-called nefesh of the convert, which is made available to them specifically for this purpose. You have known the nefesh of a ger. Verse 93. All the hidden things that the Blessed Holy One does, he has put into the Holy Torah, and everything is in the Torah. He reveals a hidden thing in the Torah, but he immediately clothes it in another garment and hides it. The wise who have many eyes are able to see a hidden thing within its garment, even though it is hidden there. They spot it when it is revealed, even though it may be hidden again within its covering immediately. And they don't lose sight of it again, despite its obscurity. But verse 94. In several places, the Blessed Holy One has already warned about converts that the people of the Holy Seed must be careful about them. The people of Israel must be careful about the converts in their midst, not to oppress them or treat them harshly in any way. And they go out of their way to make converts feel comfortable and at home as much as possible. The Talmud even says that the Torah has warned the Jewish people about this no less than 36, and some say 46 times. In one of these places, it is written in the Torah, "Do not oppress a ger, for you have known the nefesh of a ger when you were strangers in the land of Egypt." The continuation of the Zohar emphasizes the need to understand this verse and the concept of the nefesh of the ger in an esoteric way, and not according to its simple meaning. Verse 95. Having warned about the ger, the stranger and the convert, in all these places, he now takes the thing out of its covering and reveals it. This is what it says, "For you have known the nefesh of a ger, and that it is immediately hidden from the words, when you were strangers in the land of Egypt." In other words, the Saba is insisting that we should not understand this verse according to its simple meaning, that since we were strangers in Egypt, therefore we have the ability to empathize with the convert in our midst. That may be true, but according to the Saba, the Torah is not giving over here a mere psychological ethic based on the historical experience of the collective. It wants us at this point to discount the words, "when you were strangers in the land of Egypt," which is a mere garment to the important message that you have known the nefesh of a ger. It is as if the Torah thinks that by hiding the thing immediately, nobody will pay attention to it. The Saba may well be doing what he is accusing the Torah of doing, revealing one measure and hiding two. He never really explains what the phrase, "you have known the nefesh of the ger," is supposed to mean. He leaves it for us to meditate upon it or speculate about it. Furthermore, the Saba reveals now that the esoteric meaning of the verse is talking about the relationship of neshama and ruach to the nefesh of the ger. It is through this nefesh of the ger that the neshama knows the things of this world and is able to benefit from them. In other words, it is through the nefesh of the ger that all the blemished neshamot and ruchot can enter into the world. That is the main point. The nefesh of the ger is the interface, the mechanism by which blemished ruchot and neshamot know the world and benefit from it. The Zohar will now further clarify the point by comparing it to the cloud that is mentioned in the verse. "And Moshe went into the midst of the cloud, and he went up the mountain." Verse 96. The Saba began, and he said, "And Moshe went into the midst of the cloud, and he went up to the mountain." What is this cloud? This is what is written, "I have put my bow in the cloud." This bow sent forth its garment, which is the cloud, which was given to Moshe. With this garment, he was able to go up to the mountain, and through it, he was able to see what he saw and benefit from what was there. In other words, the cloud was the interface between Moshe and what was being revealed on Mount Sinai. At this point, the members of the fellowship that were present, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shia, prostrated themselves beneath the Saba. They cried and they said, "If we had come into the world only to hear these words from your mouth, then it would have been enough." That's the end of the section, the end of time. So please ask any questions.
Okay. Now, this is in the New Testament that Moses and Elijah are called and appear on the Mount of Ten Commandments. What's it called?
Sinai.
Mount Sinai.
So he did enter the Holy Land.
He did answer what?
He did enter
Moses.
Yeah.
Moses entered into the cloud, which he was then able to enter Mount Sinai, to enter into heaven with his body.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true of Elijah in the description where he went up.
Right.
Because he went up in four levels, the fire and all of that.
It sounded like Jeanette was saying that Moses went into the Holy Land,
where most Jews think he was forbidden. That he never went in.
He never went into the land of Israel. He went in up on Mount Sinai, which is not yet in the land of Israel.
It is.
It's not yet.
My cousin has a special flight from Jerusalem to the mount where the Ten Commandments were given. She does that flight every day.
That's wonderful.
It's in Israel. She works for Israel.
It's not accurate. It's corrupted. The Mount Sinai is in the Sinai Desert.
Okay.
Sinai Desert is not in the land of Israel yet.
My mother always said, from the Tiber to the Euphrates. It's a long...
From the sea to the Euphrates River. It doesn't go south.
We don't know where he was buried.
The south is...
He wasn't.
He wasn't
he
buried.
Walked.
But
oh.
The south is the Dead Sea. Mount Sinai is south, more southern than the Dead Sea. Mount Sinai is not yet in the land of Israel.
So how does she do that job?
I don't know what job you're talking about.
She's a flight stewardess for that.
She's a flight stewardess for El. She goes to, the city is Ephrat. She flies over the Sinai Desert.
Is it in the mountain, the Sinai Desert?
Mount Sinai is in the Sinai Desert, yes. But it is presently owned by the
Arab
nation of Egypt. It was won in the 67 war and then was ceded to them in the 73 war.
Either way, I win.
Of course.
Because I'm from Egypt.
Does anybody have any questions on the conference call?
I
sort of have a question. I don't know if I can realize. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay, I know. Oh, I know it was a while back. I'm not sure how long ago, but I remember late at night I couldn't sleep, and so I was with something fine, and I came across Nebo. I was at the time that having to do with Moses being on Nebo. And
Mount Nebo is where he is nominally supposed to be buried.
Okay. Well, you know how you've told us how to take a Hebrew word, and
yes.
Nebo would be with the Nun, and Bo would be center,
yes.
And that always means something to me because that's my Torah portion. So, and Nun being the 50 gates of understanding, I think that was what I was studying, the 50 gates of understanding. So it was like enter 50, or 50, so enter. So,
another way of understanding it's Bo is comes. Bo el Paro means to come to Pharaoh, not to go to Pharaoh. So it's the 50 that is coming. That's Nebo. Another understanding comes from the Gematria. 50 is the Nun, Bet is 2, and the Aleph is 1 is 53, which is Gan, Gimel Nun. Gan means the garden, like the Garden of Eden. So it's indicating that Moses went up Mount Nebo, where he is nominally buried, but he's not buried because Nebo represents heaven. It represents the Garden of Eden.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. That's what it meant. Okay. Also, the word Bo or Ba, it's still Bet Aleph.
Aleph.
So
would
that be the same? It's an irregular verb, and it can be present or past. It
that's
can become
correct, but that's
something, and it also can be the past tense, came. But anyway, answered that. Okay. Because I never did feel like he died. Right. I didn't understand it, totally.
The Torah in Zotah Bracha says he died, but he entered Mount Nebo. So the sages have, without explaining it, the Talmud says he never died. And now I've just given you that explanation through the Kabbalah.
Right. Okay.
How do you reconcile the two?
I hope you repeat it again so we don't lose it.
Baruch Hashem. Are there any other questions?
I really don't understand this.
You don't understand what, Hannah?
I said this particular lesson, although one of the chapters I got a call from Judy that her husband was in the hospital, and so I had to cut you off. So I missed a chapter. I think it was 10. So I'll have to go back and read it and also listen to the recording.
Okay. Well, this chapter 11 is very extensive, very confusing to people because we're being brought verses in translation from the Parasha of Mishpatim about reincarnation. And there's like five or six verses there, and it's not really well explained. So I'm thinking next week we'll start with chapter 11 again, or with section 11 again, so that we see it, because it says in section 11, it's an additional understanding that we're really not prepared for yet, because it's explained later on. And so he brought it here, and people are confused by it. So we'll read it again, and maybe I can explain it a little better. But, you know, as we go through the other lessons, it will become clear.
Okay, so I also don't understand, those of us who are converts, how we fit into all of this.
Well, a convert in the physical world is different than the convert in dealing with the soul, with the nefesh. It's the same word, but in the one case, a convert in the physical world, you go through the mikveh and you receive the additional soul that the children of Israel received at Mount Sinai. That's the convert in the physical world. Here we're talking about a stranger, meaning the nefesh level of soul is complete. It's corrected. And it's being worn as a garment by the ruach level of soul. But that garment is still the level of a child of Israel. When the Jew receives, the children of Israel receive the extra soul at Mount Sinai, and a convert receives it through the mikveh, it receives that extra level of soul at the nefesh level, at the ruach level, and at the neshama level. Because essentially a soul is a quote-unquote larger desire to receive. That's the difference between the children of Israel and the children of the other nation, of the other nations. That's the purpose of them going through the mikveh. You're receiving this additional soul the same way the children of Israel did at Mount Sinai. And in reality, you were at Mount Sinai receiving that additional soul, but somewhere in your process of reincarnation, that soul left you. And so you need to make a personal choice to return to become a child of Israel. And that meant going through the conversion process, ultimately the mikveh, where that soul, that additional soul, returns to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're two different things.
Okay.
One is a physical conversion, which cannot happen unless you were at Mount Sinai. But what ultimately we come to understand is that every soul was at Mount Sinai. Some had earned the right to be there, and some had not, based on their lifetimes of doing tikkun. But it gets very confusing because that's not the way anybody is taught, is it?
No, I just thought we were always there. But I
you
think
were
that
there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all
okay.
I've ever been taught, you know, not these various.
No, I know, because that's what the Orthodox halakha says. That's why when you go into most Orthodox synagogues, they don't use the term children of Israel. They use the term Jew. Mm-hmm. Because the only tribe that is representative in our modern world is Yehuda. But there's 10 other tribes that have to find their way back. And that's the process. And then all of the 70 nations, as we learned by the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, were in the classes on You Are Who You Hate, all of the 70 nations will eventually become first a B'nai Noach, and then a B'nai Yisrael, a children of Israel. How long will that take? You know, that's the discussion, is do we have to go through the other 5 7,000 year periods, or can we do it and complete it all in this 7,000 year period? And that's a machloket among the Kabbalists, as we've talked about from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
So, you're welcome. Our next class will be at 7 o'clock West Coast time. Will be a Zohar class from the Parashah of Noah. And Saturday night, at 6 o'clock West Coast time, we will have a Havdalah service. And at 7 o'clock, another Zohar class for the Parsha of Lech Lecha. And I wish you all a beautiful Shabbat Shalom, and may you have much Shalom, Shalem and Shalom in your life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The